examining issues from the perspective of newsmakers and experts. My name is Kingsley Odinchere. For tonight, pharmacists and government health facilities on strike, but their colleagues question why they should lock the dispensaries. Acting Secretary General of TEC on issue of more salaries. How can the productivity arguments come in? And Liberia holds runoff as opposition boycott the polls. What are the implications? It's Behind the News live on Sunrise FM in Koforidua and also on Radio Upper West. As usual, we encourage you to be very active listeners. You can send in your text and comments to 026-441-8767, and we move on to the stories. The strike action by pharmacists in public hospitals and other health facilities entered its second day without any resolution. The National Labour Commission has therefore called for compulsory arbitration between the government and Hospital Pharmacists Association and the Fair Wages and Salaries Commission. The pharmacists are protesting against what they describe as the Fair Wages and Salaries Commission's failure to negotiate with the association before migrating them onto the single spine. Meanwhile, the Pharmacy Technologies Association of Ghana is protesting against attempts by the government and hospital pharmacists to deprive them of access to the pharmacies and dispensaries in the government health facilities. Frank J. Bedu is the national president of the Pharmacy Technologies Association of Ghana. We have him now joining us on the line. Good evening, sir.
Good evening.
You are protesting against the strike action by the pharmacists. What is your main reason?
Thank you very much. I would want to clarify this matter here. Our press release was not to protest against the strike action, but to protest against why the pharmacies were closed to us when we went this morning to attend to our lawful duties. We know people go on strike in the various health professions, and never have we heard that any group has closed the pharmacies department to any other co-workers working in there. People are using some assertions that the pharmacy practice should be, we pharmacy technologists are supposed to work only in the presence of pharmacists. Our job description says that in the absence of pharmacists, we should take full charge of medical services. Pharmacy technologists are duly trained professionals and hold higher national diploma in dispensing technology. We are using the title pharmacy technology because the dispensing does not make us out well, because we don't only dispense drugs, we dispense even water, food, and other things. So when you say dispensing, people do not know what you are talking about.
So you are saying that you work independently.
Diploma and are competent. The aspect of dispensing of medicines is only a small aspect of pharmacy. Pharmacy is very broad. So if anybody says that it's closing dispensaries to pharmacy technologies because we are incompetent and cannot see patients, I would say this is a palpable lie.
So
we have undertaken our duties over the years with or without the presence of pharmacists.
So, Mr. Jebed, you are saying that there is no law that requires that the pharmacist should be around before a dispensary or a pharmacy is opened.
At 4, 8, 9 people are quoting, do not state any name like pharmacy technologist. It does not state our name in the act. The act only talked about pharmacists, their roles, and what they are supposed to do. Our name is not in anywhere in that act. So, using that as an excuse to refuse us from working is somehow very unfortunate. Today, it's been very frustrating in some of the hospitals. Doctors went on strike. They did not close consulting rooms. Physician assistants worked. They did not close wards. Nurses worked. Why is it that this time pharmacies are closed to us? This issue of strike is not between pharmacy technologists and pharmacists. Our beef is that we are not against pharmacies going on strike, but we should not be prevented from performing our lawful duties.
So did they bring you in the first place for you to know that this is the action they are taking, so that perhaps you could have registered that protest you are talking about now?
I Even I'm sitting here, I do not know the exact reason with which the pharmacists are on strike. If you ask me, I have no idea. Secondly, we were not informed. There has been no grudge between us and pharmacists. So why is it that you're embarking on this action and you couldn't even inform us that we were just caught within the action? So we do not want to create any risk between the two professions because we work in the same department. But we believe that one person's action shouldn't prevent the other from performing his duties.
So apart from registering your protest, what are you going to do?
Now, what we have appealed to the authorities in the various hospitals to make the dispensary available to our members to work. And if they don't do that, then they want, what should I say? It will mean a great disrespect to our profession. Let me give you an example. There are places in this country that you wouldn't find any pharmacists. Our people are there serving those communities, and no report of any malpractice has been reported from those places. So why is it that if the pharmacists are not available here in the cities and other urban areas, we cannot work?
Mr. Frank Ajebedi,
things we need to ask.
Yeah, you are raising concerns.
Called for modifications in the Pharmacy Act. If Pharmacy Act or laws are made to see the interest of one group, these are things that happen.
Just hold on for us. We'll come back to you because we have now on the line Mr. Stephen Kokwe, the president of the Government and Hospital Pharmacists Association. Perhaps he can respond to some of the concerns you have. Good evening, sir.
Yeah, it's very unfortunate that our pharmacist technicians are acting this way. Like you said, this situation that has happened, we don't want to ignite conflict between us. And I believe that, as you said, we have all been working to provide pharmaceutical care. But the leader of the pharmaceutical care is explicitly put in the law. We don't only have pharmacy technologists or pharmacy technicians. We have dispensing assistants. They are also providing pharmaceutical care. They could also come on air and also say what they are saying. The law about the operating of pharmacy has said it explicitly that if you are providing class A and class B drugs, they cannot dispense them. The law has said it. And in the hospital, most of the drugs are being provided on class A and class B prescriptions. And it's only the presence of the pharmacist. You can do that. As for the closure of the pharmacy, well, that is in our jurisdiction. We always come to work. The pharmacy technicians are supposed to provide the service. But you cannot dispense class A and class B when the pharmacist is not there. And then
May I come in here?
Mr. Ajebedi, you come in. Please hold on. Mr. Ajebedi, please hold on. We'll come back to you to respond.
See, we don't reinvent the wheel. You can go to the U.S. You can go to the U.K. The dispensing technologies or the pharmacy technician would operate in an area where the pharmacist is. The law is explicitly on the pharmacist. Because the pharmacist can be sued and can be taken responsibility for the premises. His license. Is the pharmacy technician licensed? Can he be sued?
So, Mr. Kokwe, let me just ask.
Hello?
Can they still go to work without dispensing the class A and class B drugs that you are talking about?
They can go to work.
But in this case, the place is locked up.
Most of the drugs that are provided in the hospital, class A and class B drugs, should be added. Then the other issue is that the pharmacy is like an office or a place where somebody should be accountable for everything that is there. We are audited. We are there are dangerous drugs there that you have to account it for. And that is the responsibility of the pharmacy. So if the pharmacy is not there, the pharmacy technology cannot do that.
Yeah.
But he stated that there are other jurisdictions where the pharmacy technician has been given the opportunity. Yes, there are areas where, for one reason or the other, they cannot send the pharmacist there. The pharmacist is not available there. But that does not mean that the law protects it. If there's something happens, the pharmacy council will take them on.
Yeah. Mr. Kwakwe, you please hold on for us. And meanwhile, as we try to come back to you, please go down a little bit on the volume of your set as I pick a quick comment from Mr. Frank J. Bedu. This is the explanation.
Thank you very much, sir.
Yes.
What I want to come in here with, my senior man at the other end is talking about pharmacy laws elsewhere. I don't know whether he is aware of Emily's law in the United States right now. Now, all over the world, pharmacy technologies are being given autonomy in practice. Look, in the United Kingdom that you mentioned, now the General Pharmaceutical Council now registers pharmacy technologies and they have a level of autonomy in practice. Now, in the United States, pharmacy technologies are dispensing above the classes of drugs he's talking about. Look, let me tell you this. Directors of pharmaceutical services in the various hospitals are not supposed to go on strike. And it is presupposed that we work under the supervision of these people if all other pharmacies go on strike. So what is he talking about that if without a pharmacist we don't work? We went to work presupposing that the directors of pharmacies were there to survive. And let me say this as well. If we are not supposed to work in dispensaries, it's not the duty of pharmacists to close dispensaries. It's the duty of the facilities to ascertain how lawful it is we are to be in there. It is not up to pharmacists to determine whether we work in dispensaries or not. For them to close dispensaries and go away. Dispensaries are public property. They are public properties. And should be respected as such.
Yeah.
After all, for the fact that you open a pharmacy for someone to go in does not mean he's dispensing. But for you to see people lurking around doing nothing while they're supposed to be in their department is humiliating.
Yeah,
it's
so,
never ever happened here in this country before.
So Mr. Jebedu,
any health worker,
Mr. Jebedu,
any health hotel group,
Mr. Jebedu, when you found the situation, did you directly talk to the director who should be in charge and should not be on strike?
Look, let me say this, and I put my head on the chopping board. The persons we spoke to were not straightforward. They are also pharmacists, and we could see that they somehow sided with their people. But there are laws, he's quoting pharmacy law, but apart from pharmacy law, there are labor laws which prohibit directors and managers from joining strike action. So does Mr. Kokwe want to tell me that directors of pharmacies were on strike? Then this calls for another legal issue. We went there to work because the directors were there.
Okay, just hold on.
The directors were at around, it means there's somebody supervising.
Yes.
And you don't have to close the dispensaries.
Okay, just hold on. We'll try to come back to you. But Mr. Kokwe, this is the situation. He's saying there is still someone to supervise and ensure that if it matters, there is somebody taking responsibility.
The issue is clear. I mean, I just don't want to talk because it looks like my friend is becoming too emotional. And we don't use emotions to resolve issues. So I'm unfortunate.
I'm not emotional.
Just hold on. Allow Mr. Kokwe to...
And when he starts to state things that are very untrue, I become a little bit worried. Because, you see, you can cross-check. He sees citing certain things in the United States which are not true. I mean, I don't want to go there.
The law is there. Emily's law. Have you heard of it? Have you seen it? Do you know what it means?
We are operating in Ghana, and the law...
No, you were quoting United States and UK. That's why I'm quoting you. I'm referring you.
When you were talking, I didn't interrupt you. I was quiet.
Okay, sir. Go on, please.
You see, we have embarked on a nationwide strike, and we have had a situation in the search that we operate pharmacy, and the pharmacies are supposed to be under our care. Now, if you are a supporting staff of the pharmacy and you come, I think that if your boss has told you that you are going to embark on it, and most of the time, all the pharmacies in the various pharmacies actually tell their supporting staff. They tell their pharmacy technicians, they tell their dispensing technicians. In certain cases, they have what we call medicine counter assistants. They are all providing pharmaceutical care. And so what the explanation is given about other places where the consulting room has been opened, and the consulting room comparison is not, you don't compare a situation where somebody is accountable for all the things in there.
So, Mr. Kwakwe, please let me come in here quickly.
You leave the place, come back after the strike, and something, a dangerous drug or whatever, has been missing, or whatever has been, who will be responsible for that?
Yeah, but in this case, were they told about the situation, or they came to meet
it? And I'm saying that we don't want a situation where we want to have a bad blood between us and the pharmacy technician or the pharmacy technologist. We have an issue with the Fair Wages and Salary Commission. We have been called by the Labour Commission, and we have been instructed to call off the strike. And we are going to have an emergency meeting with our members, and we'll definitely comply with the Labour Commission.
Yes. Mr. Kwakwe, we'll be looking at the strike itself, so just hold on for us quickly as we pick a last point from Mr. Bedu. In this case, what are you going to do?
I think we are all human beings and we are fallible. But I believe if you make a mistake, you have to apologize. What went on today was uncalled for and very unfortunate. I believe that Godspar executive owned the whole nation an apology, and an unqualified one as such, because we know our directors of pharmacies do not go on strike, and we presuppose that whilst they are there, we can work. So they had no reason to close the pharmacies to us, for us to lurk around as if we had nothing doing today in the hospitals. We are saying that we are not against their strike. We do not condemn it, but we believe next time they should not make these mistakes again.
Okay, Mr. Frank Ejebwadu, Bedu, we want to thank you very much for your time this evening on Behind the News.
You are welcome.
As the National President of the Pharmacy Technologies Association of Ghana. But coming back to you, Mr. Kokwe, the real issues about your strike, what are they?
The real issue about our strike, we have been told by the Labour Commission not to comment on it. There has been a compulsory proposal, and we are going to comply within 14 days. Our issues basically has been, we have been talking at along on the job rate and the placement of pharmacists and the premium, and that's it.
So they say you didn't mention anything at all. Well, we'll come back to you in a jiffy, because we have somebody from the National Labour Commission to quickly talk on the issue. Mohammed Afum is the public relations officer of the National Labour Commission. He's now on the line with us. Good evening, sir. You are welcome.
Good evening.
We are talking about compulsory arbitration here, this time not with the GMA, but with the pharmacist. What is it?
Well, compulsory arbitration is a dispute resolution process under which a third party decides for two contending parties. That is another step after mediation when it fails. Mediation is also another process in which a third party selected by the parties themselves, contending parties themselves, assist the parties to arrive at an agreement to resolve their disputes. That is different from an arbitration where the third party selected by the parties themselves decides for them. In other words, the third party imposes a decision on them, and it is final and binding unless it is challenged on points of law. On points of law means when due process is not followed. So that is what arbitration seeks to do. It's also quasi-judicial in the sense that the parties will present their case, present evidence, documentary and oral, call witnesses, cross-examine witnesses, and then the commission, or the after listening to both parties, will now make a decision based on the evidence made available and in the interest of the parties. So basically, this is what arbitration is about.
Yeah.
But most often, arbitrators are chosen by the parties who are in dispute. And mediators are also chosen by the parties in dispute. But compulsory arbitration under Ghana's labor laws is done by the three members of the National Labor Commission, representing each of the tripartite partners, government, employer association, and organized labor. So this is what the commission is going to do to resolve the dispute between the pharmacists and the Fair Wages Commission.
So where are you with them at the moment?
Pardon?
Where are you with the pharmacists?
Well, let me say that today's meeting with them is not the first that that had been held. Some months ago back, they wrote to the commission threatening a strike by a certain date. Upon receipt of that notification, the commission invited them, and after discussing their concerns, we ask that they go and continue their negotiations with the Fair Wages Commission and report back to the commission on the outcome of that negotiation. They did not come back, and what we heard was that they had embarked on a strike. So we have invited them, and we have directed them to call off the strike and then submit the matter to compulsory arbitration between them and Fair Wages Commission. And that, as I indicated, as I listened to the parties, presented their cases, the commission will make a determination, and that determination is called the award, or the arbitration award.
Well, Mr. Afum, I'll come back to you, but quickly let me ask Mr. Kokwe. This is what has been said. Why did you not go back to the commission when you indicated your intention to embark on strike?
Our intention to go on a strike was fairly on the Fair Wages and Salary Commission's deceitfulness on the process that we have embarked on together with the Fair Wages and Salary Commission. And that deceitfulness led to the strike. And so we petitioned the Labour Commission about this issue. And that is where the Labour Commission called for a compulsory arbitration.
Yeah, but you didn't find it right to inform them before embarking on the present strike.
No, but we have already informed the Labour Commission about this issue a month ago, and we actually gave the stipulated time of 18 days to embark on the strike. The Labour Commission called us and the Fair Wages and Salary Commission and instructed us to go back and resolve the issue. We went, and after a series of meetings, we came to a stalemate. And the stalemate came as a result of the fact that these two issues that we brought up was not able to be resolved. And Labour Commission and the Fair Wages and Salary Commission instructed us to go and resolve the issue at the Grievances Review Committee. But then there was a caveat that they should not migrate us onto the silver spine until those issues are resolved. But they went back and migrated us without our consent. And that led to the industrial action.
Yeah, so presently, are you saying that after the emergency meeting, you are resuming duties as you go through the compulsory arbitration?
Definitely. I've said that we had a meeting at the Labour Commission today. We are calling the emergency meeting of our national executive. And we would consider returning to the work.
I want to thank you very much, Mr. Stephen Kokwe, for your time this evening. As the president of the Government and Hospital Pharmacists Association. But, Mr. Mohammed Afung, we still have you on the line. What has the Labour Commission make of the numerous strike actions, especially in the public health sector?
Well, it is very unfortunate that we are having a lot of agitation from the public sector employees. And if we look at it, they are all connected with the migration onto the single spine salary structure. the Commission's position is that the labor law anticipated that industrial conflicts are part of the industrial relations, and therefore this body has been set up, the Labor Commission, to resolve such disputes when they arise. The unfortunate thing is that parties to industrial relations most often, and which is unfortunate, sidestep the provisions of the law and take actions which are in violation of the provisions of the law. And what the Commission expects parties to industrial relations, that is workers and employers, to know is that this document seeks to ensure harmony in the workplace. It seeks to ensure that law and order is followed. And therefore, we want them to ensure that whatever dispute that they have, if during negotiations the parties are not able to resolve them, the Labour Commission is there to help them resolve the dispute through either mediation or arbitration. In fact, if parties are committed to ensuring that the dispute settlement procedures in the Labour Act are followed, virtually there wouldn't be any strike. There wouldn't be any strike at all in the first place.
The accusation is that the Labour Commission waits till people embark on strike before they come in to say it is illegal. Are there no means by which you can quickly step in to avert any strike?
The fact of the matter is that look at the 1,001 of industrial organizations, workplaces in the country. The Commission cannot be everywhere at the place. That is why the law says that when the parties reach a deadlock, when the parties have taken entrenched positions and there is no meeting of mind for an agreement to be reached, they must, both of them or either party, can inform the Labour Commission. The Commission will step in, invite the parties to either mediation or arbitration to have the matter resolved.
So from what has been happening, do you think people have a firm grasp, or organizations have a firm grasp of what the labour law says?
You see, this labour law is not a new law. It is a codification of various pieces of labour legislation in force before 2003, when this act was passed. So it is not new. In fact, under the old law, workers who embarked on an illegal strike could be jailed, or they could be fined. They could be put. In fact, a illegal strike was a criminal offense. This law has decriminalized this action. So all that we are saying is that when there is a deadlock, the Commission is there to assist the parties to resolve the dispute. So let us hope and pray that the parties, industrial relations, workers and employers will be committed to ensuring that there's law and order on the industrial scene.
We want to thank you very much for your time to Mohammed Afum. That is the public relations officer of the National Labour Commission. It's Behind the News on Radio Ghana. You are live on Volta Star Radio, Radio VR, and also Garden City. You are live on Behind the News, and you are getting us live on Radio Upper West. You are also on Ubuntu 96.5 FM. Away from the pharmacist issue, but still on labor concerns, the turbulence in some sections of the labor front can be traced to the issue of salaries. For many workers, their take-home pay cannot be described as such because it is not up to their expectation. Any talk about increase is actively supported. The question that always begs for an answer is when workers will say their salaries are enough. It is against this background that the call by the Acting Secretary General of the Ghana Trades Union Congress, Dr. Yaban, for an increase in salaries to meet the rising cost of living has received considerable attention. The other question is, how much can be given without hurting the public purse or the kitty of organizations? How can the equation between salaries and productivity be balanced? Joining us on Behind the News to explore the issues is Dr. Yaban, the Acting Secretary General of the Ghana TUC. Good evening, sir, and warmly welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Is it really the case that when we need a four-day wage to buy tilapia, as you said?
Yes, definitely. I mean, if you should go to any restaurant and you order tilapia, they will tell you it ranges from between 12 to about 20 Ghana cedis. And if the minimum wage is 3.73, I'm sure if you multiply by 4, you'll get the figure I'm talking about.
But Dr. Man, some will also argue that it is because maybe people want to live beyond their means because they can get the same tilapia at a much lesser cost if they want to.
No, it depends on the size of tilapia you're talking about.
Well, the Ghana TUC has been involved in discussions on daily wages. How far have you succeeded in arguing for real take-home pay?
No, we have made some gains, definitely some gains. If you look at the minimum wage figures from 2001, for example, the annual minimum wage was $200 equivalent. Now we are talking about 1,000 Ghana cedis and more. That means we have made some gains, definitely. Between 2001 and 2011, 10 years, there has been a very significant gain. But if you are coming from a low base, it doesn't matter the jump. You don't learn that much. So that is the problem you are facing, because 3.73 per day definitely is not much. If you convert this to US dollars, it's about 2.5 per day for 8 hours of work. And definitely as a middle income country, $2.5 a day of 8 hours is definitely not adequate for working.
But you've still been talking about a living wage in spite of the progress you are mentioning. What difference does it make?
Yes, we started discussing the living wage in 2005. And we agreed, the social partners agreed that the living wage must be for the worker, the spouse of the worker, the spouse of the worker, and two children. So we are thinking about four people in the household, two adults and two children. And this we agreed. We agreed because the Ghana Living Standards Survey, 1999 at the time, said that four people, the average household size in Ghana was four. We are 4.1, but in reality we said it's four. So we worked this out, and we all agreed. Ghana Employers Association, Ghana TEC, an organized labor group in government. Somehow, in the course of the discussion, this whole issue you mentioned, productivity, came in, and that is where the discussion started. And until today, we have not continued. And we are asking for the social partners to revive that discussion.
Can we ever get to a living wage, looking at the situation and the regular argument about productivity?
Sorry, say that again.
I'm asking, can we ever get to that living wage, looking at that other argument of productivity that jumps in immediately?
No, why can't? Why can't we do that? Because we should do that. You see, if you say Ghana is a middle-income country, what it means is that, on average, for every Ghanaian, we are getting something like 1,800 Ghana cedis a year. If you take children out, children below the age of 14 or 15 out, the productivity per worker goes out by about 5,000 Ghana cedis per worker. And that is a significant increase in productivity. So if there is anybody telling you that productivity in Ghana is not high or is not increasing, tell the person that the person doesn't know exactly what he's talking about. Productivity in Ghana is not reducing, it's not declining, it's going up. If you measure productivity by GDP per worker, you see what I'm talking about. Ghanaians are not lazy. If somebody should tell you Ghanaians are lazy, tell them they are lying. Ghanaians work very hard. They just need the incentive. And now I always use the cocoa farmers example. When Kufuor government came in, and they said that they wanted to increase cocoa production, it took them 2 years or so. Productivity and production in cocoa industry tripled. The reason is they gave the incentives. They gave the incentives. They paved the roads. They sprayed for free. They promised the cocoa farmers that if indeed they increase cocoa production, they are going to be giving 72% of the FOB price. All this together increased cocoa by 300%. And this is what we are saying. If you do the same for all workers, you see a big change in production and productivity in this country.
So it means that on a regular basis, you also push the issue of productivity, that it is coming, but you need to be pepped up more. Is that it?
Yes, we do that a lot. I mean, if there's anybody telling you that workers don't care about productivity, again, they are not telling you the truth. Because we know that for any enterprise, for the enterprise to survive, you need to be able to compete in the market, nationally and globally. So the productivity must go up, must go up. If that doesn't happen, the enterprise will die naturally, and everybody will lose their job.
Yeah.
So workers and unions definitely care about productivity.
Yeah. Dr. Ba, earlier you've agreed on base pay and even the increase as a member of the tripartite before calling for this increase so that it will go in tandem with rising living costs. Does that mean that in your agreement, you didn't quite settle on it very well, but you had to agree on something?
Okay, you are making mention of the tripartite. I'm not sure why you are making... Are you referring to the 20% increase or
yes.
referring to the minimum wage?
The 20% across board.
It has nothing to do with the National Tripartite Committee. It has all to do with the Fair Wages Commission, Ministry of Finance and Ministry of Employment. We have what we call the Public Sector Joint Negotiation Committee. That 20% was not negotiated at the Tripartite Committee.
So it means you have no input at all in that one?
We have a lot of input. The Public Sector Joint Negotiation Committee is made up of all public sector institutions representing workers, PNC leading them, and then you have the Ministry of Finance, Ministry of Employment, and also the Fair Wages Commission. The Fair Wages Commission Chief Executive is the chairman of the Public Sector Joint Negotiation Committee. So together we negotiated the 20% for 2011.
Are you thinking about the next? Because people see delays, and even when you are talking about back pay, they are not ready to wait.
We are not ready to wait because at the time we negotiated, we agree that, yes, as people move from whatever structure they are on now to the single spine, the 20% is worked into it. We did not anticipate that by November 2011, salaries, I mean, so the workers will not benefit from the 20% increase because the migration to the single spine has been so slow. And we cannot imagine that if you get an increase in January 2011 and then November 2011, you still haven't got the increase. So what we are asking for is very simple. Some people have been migrated onto the single spine. They have got their 20%. Today, I've heard that some who have not been migrated have also got their 20%, which we think is good. All those who haven't got the 20% should get that 20% before the end of the year.
Dr. Yama, we'll leave you here for now, but we wish you have the chance to get Alice at Lafia.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Yama is the Acting Secretary General of the TUC. But talking about productivity and salaries, we have an arbitrator and a labor analyst, Senior Ejavin, also joining us on the line. Good evening, sir.
Good evening.
The question is, perhaps if you are not coming from a trade union, you also look at it in a different way. Will you describe the incessant demand for salary increase as always justified?
Well, you when you ask the question that way, then there's a problem, because if you say always justified, then it means that by any means possible, salaries must go up, right? But I believe that salaries, or let's call it remuneration, is a matter of an agreement between the employer and the employee. So, for example, even though it is not traditional in our system, it is possible for both parties to even agree for a reduction or even just keeping salary or remuneration where it is, and so on and so forth. So I would rather look at it as, you know, a conversation, an interaction between the parties to a labor agreement or a contract of employment. So it is not easy to say yes to your question that it is always justified. It is justified depending on what both parties agree upon. That's how I would choose to look.
You might have heard Dr. Bam talk about this issue of productivity, that you should not always demand productivity before asking for an increase, because it's inherent. It kindles the people's interest to generate more. As an expert in that issue, what do you see?
Okay, to clarify this, I will take you to the Labor Act, Section 98, which is headed Contents of a Collective Agreement. And under the Labor Act, anywhere you see a collective agreement, you can put a contract of employment there. But this Section 98, I will quote C and G. The C says that, let me just read, if I may.
Yeah, please go ahead.
Without prejudice to the other provisions of this Act and subject to any agreement between the parties, a collective agreement or a contract of employment may include provisions on the following matters. So now C, the remuneration and the method of calculating the remuneration of the workers. And then G says the principles for matching remuneration with productivity. So you see that the first is the remuneration, agreement on the remuneration, and the methods of calculating it. And then again, the principles of matching remuneration with productivity. So it's not basically just about productivity per se, but it's about an agreement on methodology, mechanisms to actually pay acceptable remuneration based on the productivity. Now, I believe I heard Dr. Bar say that productivity has been increasing. And it is very true. As the economy develops and we get by, productivity will also increase. He also said that if anybody tells you the Ghanaian is lazy, it is not true. And I agree, the Ghanaian is not true. The Ghanaian is very hardworking. Given the right implements, the right inputs, and the right motivation, the Ghanaian worker will always rise to the occasion. And this is exemplified all over the world, where you find Ghanaians in certain economies doing very well. So it is not only about the productivity now. We can see productivity is increasing. But how do we match that with the remuneration? And what principles do we use? That becomes a matter of agreement between employees and their employers. Dr. Barnes said that at the tripartite level, they were talking until productivity came in. And that's where our challenges lie now, I believe, as Ghana, that we have not been able to get our stakeholders, labor stakeholders, to sit and agree on methodologies, principles, mechanisms for arriving at some of these things. So it becomes difficult talking about them. But let me just put in this, that I would like to start seeing employers, for example, incentivizing remuneration rather than basing it solely on salary. You see, remuneration has three portions. The salary aspect, you have the benefits aspect that we commonly call the allowances, and then the rewards. But I think that if the salary and the benefits are constant, a lot of things, a lot of the work, okay, activities can be connected to the benefits. So that even though you have an average standard based pay, you can work hard to earn more reward.
Okay.
That way, the people doing the work, the people being productive, will end up going home with more pay than the average worker who may not be putting in that much work.
So for the same organization, there will be differentials. That is what you are saying.
Exactly. The differentials will come in only based on those actually producing. So, for example, if you are an employee, you have constant disciplinary issues, and we've tied discipline to reward, then you lose your bonuses, for example. So if you do not have disciplinary problems, you are a good worker, you come to work, attendance, and so on, then you earn more pay. Target setting, job objectivity, all of that tied to reward. Then if the person works extra and contributes to the productivity, he is paid. Currently, what is happening is that it is across board. Those doing the work and those not doing the work seem to be benefiting from the same base pay. They benefit from almost the same kind of bonuses,
yes,
allowances, and so on and so forth.
Okay.
But I believe that if we want to talk about productivity and match it with remuneration, then we have to start rewarding those who are actually doing the work. And finally, you know, there's an analysis we call the Pareto analysis. I believe you are conversant with that. That 20%, for example, of people would normally contribute to about 80% of the work in the workplace. If this principle generally works and most experts agree to it, then it means that we have to start singling out and finding those 20% and rewarding them better so that they can improve productivity some more.
Okay. We want to thank you very much for your time this evening too, Mr. Senior Gavin.
You are welcome.
That's an arbitrator and also a labor analyst. Behind the News on Radio Ghana, live on Radio Savannah and also Twin City Radio. We want to move on to our final story. The Liberian presidential runoff took place today, despite a boycott by the main challenger to President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf. The opposition alleged that concerns raised during the first round were not addressed. So how was the turnout in today's polls? Well, we move straight to Liberia and we find out from Peter Kwakwa of the Liberian Press Union. Good evening, sir.
Good evening.
Yes, how do you describe the turnout today?
Well, reports coming in from around the country suggest that there have been low turnout compared to what we saw in the first round of elections. But that's understandable. We have the legislative and the presidential election on October 11th. Different around, we have only the presidential election. And that's still, we have had the situation with the CDC asking for the boycott of the runoff election. So the reports we get suggest that the panel hasn't been that impressive.
Yeah, so it means that the call for a boycott might have worked in some way.
I didn't get that.
No, we are asking that, does that mean that Tubman's party succeeded in getting people off from voting?
Like everyone.
A little challenge. But, Mr. Kwakwa, we are asking that, did the boycott take the shine off the elections, the polls today? I guess we have a little challenge
yes,
on the line. We'll try. Can you get us very well? Hello, Mr. Kwakwa.
Well, let's try it.
Yes. We are asking that generally, did things not go so well, as you are saying, because of the call for a boycott?
Yeah, if I got you right, the center baron of the second part of the challenger for Madame Shirley, the Congress of Democratic Change, asked his supporters to stay away from the elections. And, but, I mean, the votes have been counted, we've votes, being produced in some of the places around the country, where we've heard at least, few votes, received by the CDC, indicated that, its supporters were boycotting the elections. So it's probably not new in any part of the country that they're boycotting, and so a few of the supporters have shown up to vote. But in the capital, as far as things are concerned, there have been very low turnout in most of the city, according to the reports that we received at this point.
I want to thank you very much. Because of our line, we have to leave you here. But thank you so much, Peter Kwakwa, for your update on the polls. That is all the way in Liberia, the president of the Liberian Press Union. But coming back to Ghana, Dr. Yagebe is at the Legon Center for International Affairs and Diplomacy, Lesiad. He's also on the line with us. Good evening, sir, and you are welcome.
Thank you. Good evening.
What do you make of the situation today?
Well, the events have been unfolding for some time now, particularly the runoff between former president or incumbent president, Felix Johnson, and then the competitor, Mr. Tubman, who for the right or wrong reasons have decided to quit and not to participate in the runoff. It's unfortunate, and as reports indicate, a good number of Liberians decided not to participate, and I don't think that is good for the fledgling democracy for that country.
Could it have been postponed just to allow the peace and address the concerns being raised?
I would say no, because despite everything, I think that the process is ongoing. Liberians have really done so much to put their democratic path in progress, and indications show very much that Mr. Tubman's accusations or allegations may not be, after all, true. So, because there is no indication that there are tangible reasons for him to have boycotted the election. You know, the financial implications are also very important. So postponing the election would have been the right thing to do.
Certainly, people are saying that there will be implications for the peace of Liberia. Does it look that way?
Definitely, the situation as it is unfolding now, with the riots on the street, the security forces all over the place trying to, you know, bring peace and stability, the counting ongoing, declaration of results yet to happen. So definitely we are in a period of uncertainty, but we hope that with the presence of the UN forces on the ground and also the goodwill of the international community to see Liberia make some serious progress in terms of their democratic dispensation, let us hope for the best.
And that is what all well-meaning people will be hoping for. We want to thank you very much, Dr. Yao Gebe, for your time too this evening. It's behind the news, and just before we go, we must apologize for a bit of a challenge on our line there, but this one managed to slip through. A Jawusu UDSY saying, what is good for the police is also good for all government workers. The government must be careful, that is what it's saying. And this is where we wrap it all up for today. On behalf of our production crew of Christopher Sidu, Bright Agama, Edmund Teten, Summarizer, Barbara Yakubu, the Gifted Broom at the controls, my name is Kingsley of Interest.